So let's do a Tech Tuesday right now. And we've talked to Bridget Carey, who had her second baby. We've talked to Ashley Esqueda, who just had a baby.
We talked to the Octomom. She had a bunch of babies.
And I don't know, Joan Salzman is on the line with us. Are you pregnant or expecting or have kids? I just thought there's something in the
water.
You don't
have to answer, Joan. If you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer that.
No, it's fine. I have two kids. I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, and no more on the way. So,
all right. Well, good. It's nice to talk to you. Joan Salzman's a senior writer for CNET. Totally love CNET. I've been checking it out for years and years. Every time I want to see a review of something, I go to CNET.com. And also Tech Stories. So it's a Tech Tuesday, and there's a solar eclipse going on that I was completely unaware of. How can I see it, and where is it?
Right. Well, to see it live, you have to be standing in a very sort of narrow strip of land in Argentina or Chile in South America. So if you don't happen to be there, there are ways to stream it live online. NASA is doing a live stream from a Chilean observatory, so you can get a telescopic view of it. There's also something called the Virtual Telescope Project that's giving you the chance to be able to see this eclipse that, you know, unlike the one in 2017 when there was eclipse fever, everybody in North America could pretty much get a view of a stunning eclipse. This one's much more limited, but there are these digital ways to still get a glimpse of it.
And I was just Googling it. I know the app is the best way to do it. There's an app to see it, but you can find it on the internet. Total darkness there. Did it already happen? Did we miss it?
No, so it's going to start around 2:20 p.m. Central Time, and as you know, eclipses take a period of time to get to that full eclipse where you have the circle and the diamond on the top, and so there'll be some coverage starting around, I believe starting around 2 p.m. at the beginning, going on through 3 p.m. and later.
All right, another thing we were talking about just before you came on the air, I'm going to get a skin screening at a dermatologist today. I'm a blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid who put baby oil on and no sunscreen when I was growing up. And they are saying that a lot of skin cancers are diagnosed from earlier damage in your life. Tell us about these apps now on your smartphone that can check for skin cancer. This is intriguing to me.
Right. So on CNET, we have some reviews of apps. What they do, you know, these aren't replacements for seeing a doctor.
Right.
That's really the best sort of screening that you can always get. But they are ways to help you with early detection and consistent self-exams so that you know when to go see a doctor if it seems like there's a higher risk and ask more informed questions. So these apps, most of them are free. Some of them are paired with a device that does have a cost, but most of them are free, might have in-app purchases, and generally what they do is they help you to often take photos of moles or other suspicious areas on your body, help you to compare them over time. A nice feature of one or two of them is that they separate the photos of your moles from your normal photos. So if someone's looking through baby pictures, they don't accidentally see all your moles.
Oh, it's the blob.
Yeah, but they all kind of come back to this idea that they don't replace seeing a doctor, but do help you keep on top of your skin's health, especially considering that skin cancer is the most prevalent form of cancer in the United States.
It's estimated nearly 200,000 people will receive a melanoma diagnosis, and that is can spread to other parts of your body. Early detection is key, so I'm here to tell you, if you want to get the apps, that's cool, but go see a dermatologist. That's all I'm going to say. All right, there's a big event now coming up, and Apple is not having it. It's Samsung. What's going on in the world of the new phones?
Right. Samsung's Unpacked event is set. That's its annual big, splashy product launch that comes in late summer. It's going to be on October 7th this year in New York, and we're expecting to see their Galaxy Note 10, their latest version of their phablet, quote-unquote, style big screen phone.
Phablet, did you get that? Phone and
Phablet.
Tablet?
Love the name, Joan. Love the name.
And it's the phone-tablet hybrid.
And there was a suspicious package that was in the world of Facebook. Tell us this story.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is false alarm. But yesterday in the afternoon, actually, PT, it was late in the morning, a machine at Facebook's mail sorting facility got an alert of a toxic substance. The Menlo Park Fire District ran out. There was they evacuated four nearby buildings. It was a big to-do, but as it turns out, it was a false alarm. They thought it could be sarin, the highly destructive nerve agent. Not sarin. Everything's fine. Go about your business.
People are getting annoyed with Facebook. I can tell you that much.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, that's a consideration. It was just a year ago that YouTube had an actual event similar to that. They had a shooting at their offices, and so it's definitely something where even a false alarm it raises some suspicions and concern.
All right, and there is some Apple news, and I am unclear about this Wall Street Journal report. Tell us this story.
Yeah, so the Wall Street Journal had a report about Johnny Ive and his departure. Johnny Ive has been the person who's designed these iconic products for Apple for years and years and years. He announced his departure earlier this week, but the Wall Street Journal had a report that said there had been growing tensions between Johnny Ive and Apple CEO Tim Cook, that there was distance between them, and that led to him being less of a leader, not as present of a leader for the design team at Apple. Tim Cook took the rare step of calling out this story and calling it untrue, but not in any specific point of the story, just generally saying that it didn't accurately represent the Apple that he knows.
And is he going on to start his own design thing with new phones and stuff?
Yeah, that's part of the intrigue of this reporting, is that Johnny Ive is leaving Apple, but he's going off to start his own company, which is going to have multi-million dollar contracts with Apple, so he'll continue to work with Apple. If there were some bad blood between executives or tension in management, it isn't stopping Johnny Ive to continue his work with Apple in the future.
Okay, and just before we got you on the air, I was getting an incoming call, and something I've noticed new on my phone is it said political call. So now it is labeling things that I'm getting. About a week ago, I got a call, and it said fraudulent call, a possibly fraudulent call. So this is something that never happened to me. Is this a new type of thing that's coming through to forewarn us and tell us not to answer? I know I just threw this on you, but I never saw political call before. Did you, Bill?
No, never. What does that mean?
Yeah, I haven't seen it either, but we do. But the carriers are becoming much more aggressive in labeling these suspicious, or in this case, it sounds like things that are political telemessaging, so that you know before you pick up. The main thrust for a lot of these sort of identifying features has been the robo-spam calling, because that's been such a blight upon anyone that has a cell phone. Everyone is experiencing it. It's exploding how many calls there are, just because there are machines that very easily can do these bot robocalls, and it's hard to track them. It's hard to enforce rules against them, and they're done at such a scale that it's kind of an impossible feat in order, the idea of being able to actually enforce the laws on the books that you can't have these spam calls. So the underlying impetus for this technology that will identify these calls has been these robocalls, but that's the first I've heard about like a political outreach call being identified, which I'm sure is going to be a welcome sight for a lot of people as we get into the 2020 election.
Yeah, I've never seen it before. And in fact, when I got the fraudulent call warning last week, dummy me almost answered it, thinking it was saying that someone has used my material and
for fraudulent
reasons. So I was going to answer to go, oh, and then I put two and two together.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about this, too, is people that do these robocalls change the number so it looks like your prefix and your area code. And
right.
I was just reading somewhere that some people were getting so irritated by these calls that they were calling the number back, and it was like an innocent person on the other line going, wait a minute, I didn't call you. So that's pretty bad.
Yeah, robocalls have gotten, the scope of how pervasive they are is kind of mind-boggling, but there are these, not only are carriers instituting some things on their end in order to identify them, because the best advice about robocalls is if you can, don't pick them up. When you pick up, that means whatever robocaller is using, they know that there's somebody on the other end, that there's a live human being, and they're not just going to some number out in the ether. The best thing to do is not pick up, but if you do, there are these ways now to know which calls that you don't automatically identify as being familiar. There are these new ways to identify them a little more readily. Carriers are doing them. There's also apps that can alert you to what might be a fraudulent incoming call.
Well, good. It looks like they're going to start taking care of us. Joan, we appreciate you taking the time out today. Joan Salzman, senior writer for CNET. You can find her on Twitter. You can also find her at CNET.com. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care, Joan. All right, we'll get you some news later on. Tony Fulmer from the Chalet Nursery will be joining us. That's all ahead.